I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome back to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. I'm Stein, and with me today, I have Marty.
Hello.
And Brandon.
Hi, how you doing?
And this week, we are going to be looking at two action thrillers, starring the late, great Gene Hackman, who recently passed away, but, I mean, with our turnaround rate, by the time this goes up, he'll probably be long, like a faded memory, almost,
no.
of his passing, because we don't have a really, we don't get around to these quickly. It's a marathon, not a sprint. We're recording this right in the wake of his autopsy reports that make his passing like 500 times more more sad. So yeah, woohoo, top. Yeah. good stuff. No, but yeah, great actor. One of the greats. Maybe never turned in a really bad performance, I think.
Yeah, it's possible.
At least not in anything I've seen him in.
Yeah, he's one of my first favorite actors. I mean, not, he was never my favorite actor of all time, but he was one of the first that really made a big impression on me and said, made me say, hey, this guy could be one of my favorites. I mean, you watch films like Bonnie and Clyde and Uncommon Valor, Mississippi Burning, Unforgiven, The Quick and the Dead. He's been in so many great movies, and he always gives 100%. I really like the guy.
Yeah, I remember one of the first DVDs I ever bought when my money was French Connection.
Oh, yeah.
1 and 2 set. And another early one I watched when getting into movies was, of course, Unforgiven. Yeah, great actor.
Yeah, had a great movie in pretty much every decade he was active.
Yeah, I think he snuck one under the wire with in the 2000s.
Well, I saw Heartbreakers last year, which for rom-com is actually quite fun.
Oh, I like, I think Heist and Royal Tenenbaums are both great.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Less said about, like, Welcome to Mooseport and The Mexican, you know, the better. They can't all be winners. Like we talked about with Michael Caine. He's great actors, but sometimes, you know, you gotta put the food on the table, too.
Yeah.
But the ones we did pick for watching is, we start off with 1989's The Package, returning back to, I think, probably the director we've talked about the most on this podcast at this point, Andrew Davis. He's back, guys.
Yay. Yeah, so it's Chicago. Yes.
Yeah, you'll never guess where this movie's set.
Berlin, that's right.
Oh, yeah, well, that too, yes.
Yeah, this was his follow-up to Above the Law, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, which I think is why I sort of remember that Pam Grier had a significant role in this. But she shows up for one scene.
Maybe two.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I was confusing it with Above the Law. Like, I was thinking she had the same kind of role. Like, I confused the lady in this, no offense to her, but with, like, Pam Grier. And I was really excited, like, oh, yeah, going to see Pam Grier getting out of the action there. And it's like, no, this is Joanna Cassidy. Oh, all right. I mean, sure, you're fine and stuff, but I was hoping for some Pam Grier action and did not get that. That's on me though for having a terrible memory.
Yeah. It's not an entirely pointless role though.
No,
not entirely.
She doesn't get to shoot any guns.
No,
she does die though. Entirely off screen.
Yes.
And on that note.
I just noticed that Andrew Davis was the cinematographer on, like, Hitman.
Oh.
Which stars. Pam Grier's in it. Hmm. So I didn't know he was shooting blaxploitation movies in the 70s before he got into directing.
Okay.
I know. I thought he started at, like, the BBC or something.
Well, Andrew Davis isn't English.
I think he's from Chicago.
From Chicago.
Yeah. Surprise.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's giving you the suspicion that he might be from Chicago. Yeah, I don't know. I just had no idea Andrew Davis used to be a cinematographer before just looking at this right now. Huh. You're all learning something.
Yes.
Yeah, but then we have Gene Hackman up in there. He's running some kind of security detail on a meeting. This is a Cold War trailer. I guess it was technically released during the Cold War, all the way in August of 89, which is like, it's barely still a Cold War at this point.
Yeah.
Cold disagreement.
Yeah, I guess they got like 2.5 more years out of it from that point, but
yeah,
pretty lukewarm at that point. Yeah, so this is like this is about eliminating nuclear weapons. It's a central conflict of this movie. So really, we should have made the second movie of this double Superman 4. Gene Hackman getting rid of nuclear weapons movies.
The man had a passion. Now he's getting rid of nukes.
I feel the passion with Superman for the Quest of Peace was getting paid.
In all seriousness, I really don't think Superman 4 is as bad as people say. It's not a great movie, but there are so many terrible, god-awful films out there that make Superman 4 look passable.
Maybe. I've only seen it once.
Yeah, me too.
I just did a marathon of all four, and I remember hating both 3 and 4.
So
I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, Gene Hackman's out in Berlin running security detail on a meeting between like Soviet and U.S. Military heads of military to discuss this disarmament deal, and he's out in the forest. Looking at some shady people with a backpack. he's shut down by his superiors telling him to let Berlin police take care of this. Could it backfire some way? Yes, it can.
Yeah. They're pretty stereotypical tourists, like the West German tourists, you know, like, oh yeah, it's fun being out in the forest.
The famous Berlin forest.
Yeah. Right next to the Brandenburg Gate.
Yes.
Yeah, so of course these tourists turns out to be assassins, and they kill some Russian general right after the meeting, right?
Is this
right?
Well, they blow up somebody's car.
They're wearing some Russian uniforms.
Yeah.
But then also Gene Hackman shows up and shoots them with a shotgun, I think.
Yes, that is correct.
But he gets chewed out for this by John Hurd. It's like, are you sure you weren't in on it or whatever? Giving him a hard time. But he gets a punishment. For his punishment, he gets sent to escort a prisoner, who's being court-martialed back to the U.S.
Yeah.
He picks up Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes, another collaboration between Tommy Lee Jones and Andrew Davis.
One of many.
Yeah.
I think 3 in a row, and then... Until Andrew Davis went off and made his awful Andy Garcia comedy. Brought up before. And I just, what were you doing, man? You were having a great run of workman-like thrillers. And then you made an awful comedy that nobody remembers.
It happens.
Yeah, and Tom Lee Jones, who I think was not too stoked about working on this movie, actually. Because Gene Hackman kept doing script inputs where he wanted a sort of less is more approach. And got stuff cut out. And Tommy Lee Jones was like, all the stuff that got cut out was my stuff.
Oh.
But I don't know. So I guess Andrew Davis then preferred Tommy Lee Jones because that's what he brought back. Although I did see, I think Gene Hackman was also considered for that part in The Fugitive. But was Steven Seagal considered for that part?
Wow. Which one? The one where he plays the U.S. Marshals agent?
Yeah, he should have played the Tom, but was he ever up for the Tommy Lee Jones part? In?
Well, that makes the part where he asked for a donut with sprinkles more believable. I would like a donut with sprinkles. get all package of them for me. Makes sense.
Yeah, the killer actually had two arms, and then he met Steven Seagal.
Yeah, no, I think it's Gene Hackman and John Voight was up for those parts. I mean, John Voight, he's like a Steven Seagal type now.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he gets Tommy Lee Jones to the U.S., and they get ambushed at the airport.
And we also already know at this point that Tommy Lee Jones isn't actually the soldier he's supposed to be escorting.
We already know this?
They had to talk with John Hurt had to talk with the actual soldier. Like, you're going to Chicago, you're going undercover with the Nazis. We'd seen already, right?
Maybe. I can't remember what order that happens in, but you could be right. I can't remember for sure.
I know that scene happens before, but I'm blanking on whether or not we know his name.
Walter Henke?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can't remember.
All right. Well, okay.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, because Gene Hackman, after getting knocked out at the airport, goes to find Tommy Lee Jones's wife, and then she has a photo of him, and that is someone completely different. Some guy called Kevin Crowley, an actor I must admit not too familiar with.
No.
Apparently it wasn't The Fugitive too, so I'm guessing just some guy that Andrew Davis knew.
He's got to be from Chicago, right?
Yeah. That's how you get cast in an Andrew Davis movie, just be from Chicago. Because we also have that guy, the fat cop.
Oh, Dennis Franz?
No, the guy that Danny Franz shoots, the cop who's a Nazi.
Oh.
I mean, he was in all of these, wasn't he? I feel he's in every single... Ron Dean is his name, I think.
Oh,
every single... He was in The Fugitive, he was in Above the Law. He's just like... He just lives in Andrew Davis's basement, I think. So Gene Hackman realizes he's been double-crossed and been set up to take the fall.
So he goes to the city that we know for Andrew Davis, Chicago.
Yeah, well, Tommy Lee Jones also goes to Chicago. Is he already in Chicago? Or were they always just going to Chicago? It's all Chicago.
I think Tommy Lee Jones was already there, taking photos of the locations where he's going to be at for the finale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't they just land at Chicago, the airport?
Oh, I thought they landed at Washington, D.C. at first, didn't they?
Oh, okay. Well,
Gene Hackman did. Yeah.
But yeah, the conspirators killed the wife and shit, and then...
Gene Hackman gets locked up?
Oh, that's right, and like... the worst high security cell of all time. He just goes out the window. It's like, you're locked up now. Don't go out this openable window. And he does.
And he hooks up with his ex-wife, who's also in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So they can investigate this together, because I guess she's the only person he can trust now.
Yeah. And she works with Pam Grier in a largely thankless role.
Yeah, she gets to show up twice.
that's the gist of it.
Say some lines, and then she dies.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to watch my false memory version of this, where she's in the parking garage shootout and shit.
The Dementia cut.
This movie basically works as like an Under Siege prequel, if Tommy Lee Jones escaped at the end.
Oh, yeah.
He might as well be. He could have been playing Eddie Lomax.
No Gary Busey cameo, though, unfortunately. Sad face.
At the end, he just jumps in his North Korean submarine.
We can wish.
Yeah, so Gene Hackman and his wife sort of slowly uncover this neo-Nazi group. I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a neo-Nazi group that wants to assassinate the president and bring back nuclear weapons, I guess. So,
well, not bring them back, but prevent them from going away.
Yeah, kind of like, the only thing that's been keeping us safe is nuclear weapons. You're going to have Russians walk in the streets of Chicago any minute if you take them away. What is it? John Hurt says you're going to be fighting the communists on the street of Washington or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, this premise does make sense, because I do believe the Nazis' headquarters in the United States is in Chicago, of all places. So it makes sense that you would set, like, a fascist organization in Illinois.
Well, for Andrew Davis, it makes sense to set anything in
Illinois. Okay, that's fair enough, fair enough.
I mean, this is basically just like a soft remake of Above the Law, almost. Like a government conspiracy to assassinate a politician.
In Chicago.
It's not that, yeah, it's not that far off.
I do wish that it had Henry Silva in it. He's great. Yeah. Sneak him in there somewhere.
The Tommy Lee Jones part.
Oh.
Oh, then it wouldn't be a twist that he was the bad guy. 5 miles
away. We all know, yes.
There's never been a more evil looking dude than yeah. We got Dennis Franson here, like you said, and Randy Santoni from Dirty Harry shows up. Mm-hmm. Like great guys kind of cast.
John Hurt.
Yeah, John Hurt playing the Colonel, who's like inside guy, I guess, backstabber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a stacked character actor cast, even down to like Gene Hackman. That's what's so great about Gene Hackman. It's like he's a character actor, but he's a leading man.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where are like fat, balding leading men now? Like, Gene Hackman was always heavy set and balding from the moment he broke through. Like,
yeah, they don't make him like they used to, I guess.
I accept your challenge. I shall go to Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, this, especially in our second movie today, this it's just like everyone has a bald spot, I feel.
But I do like how Dennis Franz gets a real chance to shine here. He even kills a couple people. And that he's our friend from Die Hard 2, of course. He's one of the security guards at the airport. And this movie is like the definitive Dennis Franz experience, which isn't really saying much, but I mean, it's fun to watch.
Well, I feel he made a like 200 episodes of a TV show that maybe is sort of the slightly more Dennis Franz experience.
Oh, but does he kill anybody in that show?
Very possible. It's like 250 episodes of it.
It's a sitcom.
But what he does show
90s propaganda, so yeah.
Okay.
And that's what we don't get in this. Is Dennis Franz's ass. For that, you gotta go to NYPD Blue, or what is that movie where Nicolas Cage plays an angel? City of Angels.
Okay.
For that true Dennis Franz ass action, which is what we all want.
That's what I want. Give me that hairy ass.
Couldn't remember that Pam Grier had a small role in this, but he can tell you where Dennis Franz shows his ass like that.
Yeah,
oh, I remember that Pam Grier had a bigger part than she does. Yeah, but yeah, I run DennisFranzAss.org where we log all sightings of Dennis Franz's ass in media. Oh. So far, we have 2 entries.
Well, he's still alive, I believe, so he could do more. Bring that saggy, hairy ass back, Dennis Franz. We need it. The world needs you right now.
Yeah, he's still kicking around, but I think he's been retired for ages. I don't remember the last time I saw him in anything. Maybe he just retired after NYPD Blue ended.
It's possible.
I mean, 250 episodes also. Like, maybe you're just living off residuals forever. But yeah, he slowly uncovers this stuff, and yeah.
It's a little convoluted.
Yeah, I mean, it's less convoluted than Above the Law, I think.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Still. Well, it's still somewhat convoluted.
Yeah, I mean, Above the Law is a Steven Seagal film. So unless it's marked for death or something like that, it's going to be convoluted. But, like, the package, it does have a lot of, like, plot threads going to and fro. You know, you've got, like, the guy infiltrating the neo-Nazis, and you have Tommy Lee Jones doing his business, and you have the opening scene of the German terrorists, and you have Gene Hackman doing his investigation. And they all link up in the end, which is good, but it still feels like a bit much at times.
Yeah. You have the experience of, like, what is the actual plot when you're watching it?
Oh, yeah. I felt that way, too.
Who's leading the story?
Yeah, especially when they infiltrate the Nazi group. That plot point disappears for, like, 20 minutes before it resurfaces again. Which is whatever. I mean, it works out in the end. This is a good movie on if you're, like, working with vibes. But the plot is a little complicated at times.
There's a lot of plot, considering it's basically just Tom Lee Jones is there to assassinate the president.
Yes.
And there's a lot of stuff going around all of that that isn't that important. It's just like, Yeah, he picked up Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee Jones assassinated president. That's a line straight through. But for some reason, there is like 50 plot threads on either side of that that they have to unnest just to like understand that. Oh no, he's here to kill the president, which is what we already knew.
Yes.
Wait, is it the president or is it the Soviet leader?
I think it's both, isn't it? He wants to kill both George H.W. Bush and Mikhail Gorbachev.
Well, the fake ones. I don't know. I just think they believe they're plotting to assassinate the president. It's sort of the plot description. I don't know if it's who exactly it is. I mean, who is the guy who's... Is it not the American one that's holding up the baby when he's aiming at them at the end?
I honestly don't know.
Or did they... did they let us... So, well, they don't really... Those characters aren't, like, really set up.
Yeah. Like we're. I mean, you can tell they're based off George Bush Sr. and Gorbachev, though, just by the way they appear.
Yeah. I mean, there's a parade at the end, and he's aiming at one of them.
Yeah.
Who's holding a baby. Maybe it's the... Maybe he's supposed to shoot the other one right afterwards, for all I know. But that's the one he's aiming at that we see when they stop. Make an unplanned stop. Anyway, Gene Hackman bursts into the room, shoots Tommy Lee Jones. They saved. And then he reveals to John Hurt that he's like, I know you're behind this. Because he's sort of been... John Hurt's been on Gene Hackman's ass from the start.
Not literally, unfortunately.
About the job in West Berlin and then something that happened in Iran prior to the movie or whatever.
Like Operation Eagle Claw, when the Americans tried to rescue the Iran hostages back in like the 80s, very early 80s, but a sandstorm hit and killed everybody. So it's the background to that story. Just kind of a... It's Jimmy Carter. He did try to authorize military force to rescue the hostages in Tehran, but it backfired completely due to weather. And that's that plot thread, I guess.
All right. And then, well, that's it, I guess. He just sort of threatens him. And then we get like a scene at the end where the conspirators on both sides are killed by a different conspirator higher up, I guess, who wants to keep it a secret.
Yeah.
And this is, I don't know, this is just, maybe this was just my DVD, but like, was, for you guys, is the final frame of the film in black and white, or was this just something with my copy?
I don't think so.
I can't even remember. I enjoyed the film, but I can't remember. Yeah,
I think it's if it's a fault with the 88 films DVD or what, but it's like, because it seemed unnatural. Like, it's just the very last frame. It doesn't like go to black and white or anything. It's like one frame of the movies in black and white right before the credits. I was like, what?
They're trying to be artsy.
But I... yeah. But it's not like I can claim any money back for the DVD because I just borrowed it at the library anyway, so...
Yeah, so at the end, Russia and the US get rid of their nuclear arsenal, I guess?
Yeah, well, that's what happened in real life, I
guess. It's a happy ending.
At least so.
Yeah.
It does seem a little optimistic, giving today's events, like modern events. You know, it's kind of like, oh, the end of the Cold War. We're getting rid of all the nukes and they'll be the end of history and we'll all be like happy. You know, that it's like 20 years down the road, it's like, oh God, we got to go through this shit again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also in the, instead of, there will also be a scene of the president calling the Nazi group some very fine people.
So yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid movie overall. Not the best I've seen, but as far as Gene Hackman movies go, this is a really impressive action thriller because I really like seeing Gene Hackman playing like an action star. I mean, as we've hinted at earlier, he's not the most in shape individual, but seeing him like beat up people and shoot them, there's just something so satisfying about it. So even if the plot is convoluted, I still had a good time with this because the vibes are there. Gene Hackman's there. Chicago's there. Neo-Nazis get arrested or whatever. So it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, Gene Hackman's never, like, say, not like super in shape, but he always looks like he can beat the shit out of you.
Oh yeah, he's really scary in all his roles. Yeah.
He's commanding.
Oh,
he's
grumpy
as hell.
Yeah. He always has that, like, look on his face, like he's going to make you, like, shit in your pants if you ever come up to him, you know? You don't want to talk to Gene Hackman. He's going to make you shit your pants. So he's always intimidating.
Yeah. And I believe that this movie had a bit of a homage to French Connection.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes. The car chase. Well, not really a car chase, but when he's speeding his car through the city of Chicago to get to the assassination attempt.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely borrow some shots from French Connection.
Yeah, I noticed that too. That was fun.
Yeah. And it's also set at Christmas, like the French Connection, which is sort of like why we rejected French Connection for this, was that, well, we didn't just want to do French Connection 1 and 2, and then French Connection, oh, we can save it for like a Gene Hackman Christmas episode. Thought, oh, well, you could have saved it together with the package, I guess. But yeah, of the whole like Andrew Davis run, I feel this is maybe the second weakest of the movies. Certainly one of the ones to get at least talked about. Obviously the weakest one being Code of Silence.
Yes.
Which, even as fun as that one is, it's weighed down by starring Chuck Norris. Sorry to Chuck Norris, but I'm just going to put it out there. Harrison Ford, Gene Hackman, slightly more charismatic individuals than you are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe Code of Silence. Maybe I'm underrating it. I just remember he has a robot sidekick at the end.
That's all I remember as well.
But it certainly feels like the package feels like the least talked about of that Andrew Davis run from Code of Silence to The Fugitive. Maybe I'm just hanging out in circles where people talk about Code of Silence more than normally. But it feels like the package is the forgotten one.
Yeah.
Between us two Seagal films.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about it too. And it really shouldn't be forgotten because it's a solid action movie.
Yeah, there's no really bum movies there. The Andrew Davis run from Code of Silence to The Fugitive. I haven't seen The Final Terror, but also it's some kind of slasher movie. Not really my bag.
Yeah.
Marty, you go watch it.
Sure. Next time we do an Andrew Davis movie, I'll have seen The Final Terror. I hope it's set in some sort of like summer camp in downtown Chicago.
In the middle of the park, yeah.
It's set in Wrigley Field.
Although a slasher film set in the Sears Tower, Willis Tower, whatever it's called this week, that'd be a good movie, right? Right? No, you're right.
Yeah, but from one workman-like director who had a solid track record and then one movie that completely derailed that to another, Peter Hyams.
Oh, yeah.
Also a cinematographer, actually. But ooh, that I do know, that he shoots most of his own films, at least from a point.
Yeah, it's weird that he didn't start as a cinematographer and then went into directing. He seems to sort of done it the other way around.
Yes, where like I just learned, at least, that Andrew Davis was a cinematographer and then went into directing. And I think Andrew Davis shot like maybe his first feature film himself. Peter Hyams started shooting his own films from his 10th feature.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, yes, shot all of them going forward, I think.
Yeah, there were rumors that he also shot Outland before. So where exactly he started?
Ghost shot it?
Yeah.
I don't know what you... Ghost Lens?
Something.
I don't know who's the credited cinematographer on Outland. But yeah, the only movie Peter Hyams ever shot that he didn't direct is Universal Soldier Regeneration, which from 2009, so that's when he...
Which was directed by his son, John Hyams, so yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so he kind of just did that one as a favor to his son, I guess. It's the only movie he ever shot without directing, and it's a great movie.
Oh yeah.
It's a good one.
We're rare to talk about, but fantastic film. Honestly, those John Hyams Universal Soldier movies, really great. And where's the other stuff, John Hyams? Where are you hiding all the other good movies? Yeah. That you're not making them. I don't know. I haven't seen his two horror movies, but
Alone was fun.
It's like, just not to total derail everything here, but it's kind of like with Isaac Florentine, where there's like, oh yeah, oh, you just made one of the best action movies of the decade with Scott Adkins in here. Oh, how about we just don't let you make anything for a while, and then you can just have half of the budget for whatever you make next. Yeah. instead of like, oh yeah, hey, maybe we should let you guys make some bigger stuff. Let's give you more money. But instead they're just like, oh no, fuck off, back into the DTVs with you.
Yeah, after his two Universal Soldier movies, he should have been given a blank check.
Yeah, or like just like when they're doing like Expendables 3 and they get in some Australian guy who's never done any, he's done like one movie, and it's like, well, that's obviously, but that's again because Stallone can't give up any creative control. We've got to ghost direct everything. But again, this is an episode about Gene Hackman, guys. Remember Gene Hackman?
Oh.
Yeah, we got Peter Hyams. Narrow Margin is the name of the movie. We did a 15-minute rant there on everything else, but Peter Hyams, probably best remembered maybe for his like two Jean-Claude Van Damme movies that came out after this.
Yeah, I guess
so. Time Cop and Sudden Death. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what do people know Peter Hyams for, because this was like Outland with Sean Connery and 2010, the 2001 sequel.
Oh, yeah.
I love him. I haven't seen all his stuff, but I love him. Yeah,
he's a great, great workman-like director.
I also would genuinely name him as my favorite cinematographer if I had to pick one.
His movies look great, except one of them, Sound of Thunder. This is, by the way, if you've never seen Sound of Thunder, it was absolutely tanked his career. It's a movie that was ridiculously expensive, made almost no money, and it has all of the worst CGI you've ever seen.
Yeah. That one isn't good.
No, it's one of the biggest bombs of all time. I think it killed a studio. What's that studio called? Like Franchise Pictures? I think that's who did it. Anyone? Anyone?
I don't know. They're really tempting fate with that name, with that studio title, though.
Yeah, Franchise Pictures. Yeah, because they came out and then they did like Get Carter with Stallone and Driven and like Ballistic and Battlefield Earth and Sound of Thunder. And I think they did Half Past Dead with Steven Seagal too. So just like an all-timer, like terrible run of awful movies and just like huge bombs. And so I think Sound of Thunder is what would kill them off. Because that's the last one of those that I mentioned, at least. But yeah, they came, made crap, and disappeared. Yeah, Battlefield Earth 2, right? That's one of the like a legendary bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, they burned bright and fast.
And at least nobody's made a religion around a Sound of Thunder.
I think the religion came first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Sound of Thunder, where it's like the butterfly flaps its wings, or you step on a butterfly in a time machine, what happens?
Oh, the butterfly effect? That's kind of like the
basic... Well, that's not... The butterfly effect is a butterfly flaps its wings, makes a difference thing, oh, okay. Isn't it?
Causes this is more a tornado or something?
This is more like, what if you went in a time machine and you accidentally hit a bug in the dinosaur age, and then you come back to the future, and everything is different. I don't know why we're talking about Peter Hyams. All his movies look great. This one movie looks great.
Oh yeah,
his final movie was a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie too, but that was 12 years ago now. Now he mostly does talking head bits in O.J. Simpson documentaries, I think.
He's the expert.
Yeah, well, he was a close friend of O.J. Simpson from back when they made Capricorn. Really? Yeah, they made Capricorn 1 together in the 70s, which was like O.J. Simpson's breakout in acting, I guess.
Okay.
Or maybe his first movie.
Great movie, too, by the way.
Not his first movie. But it's a good movie about they fake a Mars landing, I think.
Yeah.
Oh.
What it is. They became good friends. And he's in a lot of OJ documentaries talking about... He was in OJ Made in America, talking about talking with OJ after the murders, I guess.
Oof.
But we have Narrow Margin here. A train set neo-noir thriller from 1990. A remake of a 1950s noir by Richard Fleischer, which I did watch for this just for fun, and because it's 70 minutes long, so...
Yeah. Did you watch it before or after?
I watched it before.
Okay.
And it's great. I would absolutely recommend you go watch Narrow Margin by Richard Fleischer. Just zero fat noir.
Mm.
Great stuff. It's different from this one, obviously. In this one, In the original, it's they're escorting the widow of a slain gangster. So there's nothing to witness. She's already, it's just like they show up and she's like, hello. And they come on a train with us. And the twist is a different twist. Okay. But I'll leave that unspoiled because you came here to hear about us talk about Narrow March in 1990. And so I'm not going to spoil Narrow March in 1952 for you, even though, I mean, the movie is, what the fuck is that, 70 years old at this point. Yes. But yeah, we got Narrow Margin, where Ann Archer witnesses a murder.
It's a pretty bad date, I'd say, when your date gets murdered at the end.
And not even at the end, it's right at the start.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
she didn't even get her good dinner.
That's right, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so Ann Archer's on a blind date with J.T. Walsh, also rest in peace.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest twist of the movie is that he isn't the bad guy.
Well, he's not a good guy.
No. He's not the bad guy.
When I saw his name in the credits, I was like, oh, hell yeah. And then he died really early on. Yeah. He's just a great character actor. I love it when he is in stuff, which, of course, yes. He isn't anymore because he died like 20 years ago. Yeah, so she's plays a... I don't know, some divorced single mom set up on a date with his lawyer. And he's like, oh, yeah, I got to go make a phone call. So you go to his room to make the phone call. And Harris Yulin shows up being all evil, like, and bald. This movie, Scott, this is a bald guy's movie. Everyone got a bald spot.
Yul Brynner should have been alive to be in it.
Yeah, he shows up with a guy who claims to be lawyer or something. No, J.T. Walsh is his lawyer, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
He shows up with some guy. I don't know this guy. And anyway, he's like, oh yeah, you stole money from me and you're gonna pay me back and we're never gonna talk again. It's like, I lied. Stealing lines from Schwarzenegger. And they shoot him in the face. But they don't realize that Ann Archer is there and she's seen it. And nobody realizes, really, until like a week later. Not J.T. Walsh, he's dead. M. Emmett Walsh. Too many initials up in here.
Three Walshes.
M. Emmett Walsh finds some fingerprints on a glass in the bathroom that she drank water from. And they managed to track it down through some database. Yeah, they find her. It's kind of weird. This is like, it's so much happens between these two scenes.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, those couple scenes. I mean, a lot happens, but it's not presented in like a confusing way. It's just kind of like, okay, we found the glass, belongs to this person. All right, Gene Hackman, here's your mission.
Yeah, Gene Hackman plays the assistant DA of Los Angeles.
The deputy DA.
Deputy DA. I guess that's higher than assistant DA.
Well, it's because he's a deputy, he's able to get the gun from the kid later on. Because the kid's like, I can read. And he's like, well, you can see that I'm a deputy.
That's right. Oh. Deputizes the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they track down her friend who tells them everything. But again, this happened between cuts. M. Emmett Walsh just shows up and be like, reads off a piece of paper that, oh, this is this is the seven things I've done since the movies were last in. And so they're like, oh yeah, she's ran away. She's in a cabin in Canada. We can go up there. So they do.
That's a very familiar looking cabin.
Yeah. We talked about this sequence on our Frank Segarin episode because it's in like five other movies.
Yeah.
Because I guess, because this is, talking about companies that went bankrupt. This is a Caralco production.
Yeah.
Who also went bankrupt after Cutthroat Island lost $150 million at the box office. And I guess it was, that's also a thing where at some point people could buy a lot of Caralco action scenes to put in their movies, because I remember I watched Jim Wynorski movie called Militia starring Dean Cain, and that one uses from like Rambo 2 and Terminator 2 at least, and those are both also Caralco pictures. So there's definitely someone was able to buy scenes out of the Caralco library at some point. Yeah, because I think it's always when that kind of stuff shows up, it's either from Caralco or Canon Group, mostly. I don't know who did, the other one I know is did Caralco do Last Action Hero?
I'm not sure.
Could be.
Because that's another one that I've seen show up and stuff like that. And it's the only one that I don't know for sure is a Karolko or Canon production. But yeah, it's this scene where helicopter shows up, shoots up the cabin, helicopter crashes, and they run away in a truck. And that's been used in like half a dozen movies, including No Tomorrow with Frank Sagarino. Is it Frank Sagarino in No Tomorrow who's in the cabin? Or?
Yeah, I think so. He's in the car.
He's in the car, okay. Because that's one of those movies that have 100 different people in the cast, isn't it?
Yeah, Pam Grier as well in a tiny, tiny role. Master P in the lead. Who can forget?
Great actor, Master P. I remember him well from... Oh, fuck. It was a movie. It was a movie, for sure. Okay.
I remember him so well.
Oh, he plays the mayor. It's like some kind of shitty movie that Albert Pune directed for one day and I got fired from and someone else took it over. And I don't remember what it's called. Brent Huff starred in it. Killer, but he's a cop. And one of the ladies from... The black lady from Baywatch. No one love. It's called Bad Business with a said.
Oh.
Yes. And Master P was in it. It's about some murders going on at a hotel. And then twice they call Master P, who's holding a surfing competition at this hotel resort. And are like, I'm really worried about how the murders are going to look for my surfing competition. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But this movie.
It is a great action scene.
Yeah, yes. It's probably the best one in the movie.
It's not, without a doubt, the best one in the movie.
It's the best one in 6 movies, Brendan.
Okay. That's true.
Yeah. Emmett Walsh bites it. Shut up. Also, bald. bald doctor. We get Gene Hackman with a bald spot. Emmett Walsh with a bald spot. And also the assassin has a bald spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and J.A. Preston, the district attorney.
Yeah. He's pretty bald too. Harris Yulin, obviously, quite bald. So I don't know. And also, all the time, there's no hiding any bald spot in this movie. It's like, yeah, get the camera right on that bald spot. I don't know if Peter Himes was. Maybe Peter Himes had just started balding and he was like, I'm going to show everyone the bald
people. Finally, some representation.
Yeah, so they escape from the cabin and. Luckily, there's a train station nearby, so they get to get down there and get on a train, and Ann Archer pretends to be pregnant so they can get a cabin.
It's not a convincing scene.
No, she definitely doesn't look pregnant at all, so I don't know where that comes from.
But everybody's like, oh, you look totally pregnant. And it's like, no, she doesn't. This is a horrible scene. But...
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, because she's like, oh, no, if I go into labor again. And it's like, bitch, you don't even look a little bit pregnant. But it's like she sticks her hand under her sweater. This old couple buys it, I guess. Yeah. Some parts of the script are not super tight.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, then they get on the train. But, of course, so do the two killers.
Yes. And I do think it's funny that... They say like, oh, the nearest city is 150 miles away, but there is a train station on a mountain in the middle of nowhere in Canada.
Yes.
But sure, yeah.
I that seems really logical to me. I don't know how you got it, because you're from a small-ass Central European country, but we have the same thing. We have our railroad runs... We got one that runs cross country from west to east, and then one that runs east to north, and that's what it's like. It's okay. Just you take it for like 10 hours, and there's hundreds of stops along the way. A lot of them are really small. That seems completely logical to me.
Okay, it's the only thing realistic about the scene.
Yeah. Up here in my long ass country with our trains.
Okay. Yeah, they get on the train.
They ride the train.
No.
Yeah, and then they just try to outsmart the gunmen. The hitmen, I guess, kind of. Mostly what's happening.
Yeah, because the hitmen...
sorry.
The hitmen don't know what an archer looks like at this point.
Yeah, that's what Gene Hackman realizes. It's like their one advantage, which they then don't really use for anything because they just keep her locked up in the train compartment the whole time.
Yeah.
When in fact, Gene Hackman should be locked up in the train compartment and Ann Archer can walk around the train as she wants because nobody knows what she looks like.
Yeah, oh. But Stein, she's not bald. So she couldn't. Don't have a person with hair lead this movie? No, oh, come on.
I just feel like they never use it for anything, the fact that they don't know what she looks like. It's like, she's the one, she could have moved around unnoticed, but she doesn't.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah. Although Gene Hackman does jump in bed with some random lady at one point, and it's kind of creepy, but...
Yeah.
That scene probably would not make it into the film today if it was made today, but...
No, I was watching that. Bed. I was watching that and was like, yeah, she's traumatized for life.
Yes!
She can never sleep again unless there's a door that can be locked.
That's not a great scene.
Yeah, I guess, because then we're on the train and just the gunman trying to find out where they stay, and I think Gene Hackman switches the signs on the door at that point, or did they just change compartments? Because they're in A3, and then they change to C3.
Oh.
Did he change the sign, or did he just take a compartment when he saw that family get off the train? And just
yeah, I wasn't sure.
That no one was getting on again.
I wasn't sure about that. Yeah, I didn't get that either. I mean, wouldn't it kind of make sense to like hide in the crowd like the entire time on the train so nobody would... Would that make sense? I don't know. Like, so nobody would shoot you if there's a bunch of witnesses? But
or, that is what he does, though, right?
At one point, yeah. But what about, that's like, what, instead of, I don't know.
Because there's like, a dinner cart, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Right in the middle that the bad guys have to go through to go to his compartment. So that's where he stays out because he knows they can kill him there because there's too many people. And he can see whenever they go towards his compartment.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was just kind of wondering why they didn't just chill with, like, a huge crowd of people the entire time, but... Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess that's my main problem with this movie is that every time it seems like there's going to be some action after the first action scene, it doesn't happen. Like, you're like, oh, the bad guys are here. Now they know what compartment they are in. They're going to come for them. And then, no, we cut to black and we're coming into the next station. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, what happened in the meantime? All the hitmen are just chilling out?
But we do get that good scene in the bathroom where Gene Hackman beats up a guy while he's not wearing any pants. That is a good scene. He jumps out a window, and that seems pretty fun. Yeah,
that's after this. That's because on the first stop, he calls back to the DA's office to be like, oh, there's killers here. Get some people on the next stop. And then they come to the next stop, and he's immediately suspicious of these two people. Instead of asking for ID, he just uses a code.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like a 314, which is public exposure or something.
Yep.
And then he takes off his pants and attacks this guy.
There's a bit more to it than that, but that is what happens.
That's just train station himself. Toilet etiquette. You gotta...
Luckily enough, he has just enough time to put his pants back on before the guy attacks him again. Because he just like lightly knocked him out, and then again... He attacks him and then he just kicks him in the balls and leaves him alone.
Yeah, he kills Scott by kicking him in the nuts.
Yeah, then he dives out a window. Which, sweet.
Yeah.
Looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. And I gotta say, there's two moments where you think like, oh, he's gonna get a gun, which is gonna give him a bit more of an upper hand. And the bathroom fight is one. And the way they let him not get a gun, I think, is always good. Because here he has to jump out of the window, otherwise he's gonna get shot, so... He can't get the gun anymore. He doesn't have time.
Yeah.
And the second time, he's fighting on the roof. Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought he was going to get the gun and shoot the fake Canadian cop, but then he didn't. Jumps out the window instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then they chase him into the forest, and he does like the old throw a rock in the opposite direction trick to fool them, and then he scuffles back to the train and like in the background of the scene, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny to see him running in the background.
It is a little humorous.
It does seem to be him actually running to catch the train, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much of his own stunts he did, but it seems I mean, it's definitely him later when he's like climbing on the train, which obviously looks probably wasn't shot on a fully running high speed train. but there's like no way that's not him because it's like you see his face the whole time.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe he was just into doing his own stunts.
Could be. And he was like 60 years old at this point, I think.
Yeah, he's born in 1930, I think. Same as Eastwood.
Oh.
Well, yeah, Eastwood's always the reference point because he's the only one that's alive still. Yeah. 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 Well, so now he's known there's an insider, and he also suspects there's a second or like an unknown third assassin on the train. I don't know where he gets that from.
Yeah,
we never see that. He just sort of brings it up at one point when he's talking on the phone. And his suspicion is this really fat guy.
Fat shaming that guy for no reason.
Yeah, the movie hangs him out several times for being fat.
It's like, it's got to be the fat guy who's trying to kill me. I know it.
This guy never was in another movie, so maybe... He was like, we went to see this on the premiere, and everyone's just like, Jesus, look, this fat guy. And he's like, never going to act in movies again.
It's totally bonkers how he just suspects that guy of trying to kill him for no reason, but it adds a little something to the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. It's like sort of the only red herring character, and then, turns out the third killer is shocking the only other character on the train that Gene Hackman ever interacted with.
The horny blonde lady.
Yeah, this feels like such a weird twist that the movie just pulls out of nowhere for no reason, almost.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
Well, I liked it because I was like, why would she be so interested in Gene Hackman? I mean, he's not an ugly dude.
He's a movie star.
Then, oh, she was an assassin. Okay, now I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Clever stuff, Peter. You got me.
And then it does the ending of Speed before
Speed. Yeah. Yes.
Kinda.
Yeah. And it's probably the only part of the movie that doesn't look good is when she dies, because you don't really see what happens.
Yeah. That's a little strange.
Yeah. Also, it's sort of just, it's weird that they've been going through, they go through so many tunnels at that point, and then like, oh, the Spartan assassin that fooled you all until right now is too dumb to think of the idea that there might be another tunnel. Yeah, and then basically she dies, smash cut to the courtroom where Ann Archer points at Harris Yulin and says, he did it, he's the bad guy.
Gene Hackman smiles and roll credits.
I would get a little callback when the guy justice died because he's getting a bit, what do you call it?
Uncomfortable? Yeah. Not choked up, but...
Well, he's realizing that the ropes are tightening around him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, of course, the assassin is not in the courtroom to be identified because Gene Hackman threw him off a train. Weird how that never comes up in the trial. Yeah. Great looking movie, though. Like, I love just the... All the night stuff looks great, and the action is great. And just especially just some like stuff you see, just like lights through the trees, and it's like Jesus, movies used to look like movies. Now you just get like gray slop on Netflix.
I especially loved the shot when Ann Archer is hiding in the bathroom. She's behind the door, and the assassin walks in. Holy shit!
And it's like just one shot too, just the camera. Follows the assassin into the room, pulling back, and it just reveals her behind the door with like one like sliver of light lighting her in the gap in the door.
Yeah,
it's a fucking great looking shot.
Yeah,
and there's this nice shot of the train like going through the Canadian wilderness, and it's like reflected in like a lake near it. So you see like two trains. I thought that was nice. I mean, cinematography here is pretty, and the action scenes are exciting. This probably has like some of the best rooftop on a train action scene I've seen since Breakheart Pass with Charles Bronson. So that's a plus. But yeah, it works. It is a little talky at times for my taste. Like when she's describing her backstory, you know, it goes on for a while. And when he's talking to the hitmen, it goes on for a little while. And I know it's supposed to be suspenseful, but this is like the third act of the film. So I wish things would probably progress a little faster. But if it was a little less talky at times, this could be like an ace film. And it's still good the way it is.
I loved it. I love checking out a Peter Hyams movie that I haven't seen yet. This is just great concept, great execution. Hackman is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He really gets to do the grumpy, smart-ass old guy routine.
Yeah.
It's also just great to have two leads in a movie that are 60 and a woman in her 50s or something.
Mm.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And the train setting is great.
Hackman's great in Bodies.
Mm. Yeah.
They're good proto-geezer teasers.
Back when geezer teasers actually starred the geezers. didn't just tease them.
Yeah.
Peter Hyams, great track record. Even the stuff that he wrote without directing it, like Telephone with Charles Bronson. You should watch that. That's a great Cold War thriller.
Yeah, it looks good from the trailer I saw.
One of my favorite Bronson films, for sure. Ooh. Don Siegel. I can also see why he decided to shoot his own films, because they look great.
Mm-hmm.
Just for fun here, because we talked about John Hyams, his second son, who's a film director. His first son is the CEO of Indeed, like the job search website.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And his youngest son is a battle rap promoter under the name Lush One.
Well, I guess all your sons can't be winners, I guess.
I found that funny. the different ways the roads they traveled. But yeah, he hasn't directed again since 2013. I guess it's sort of a run through of everyone this week is that they retired. I don't know when Andrew Davis retired, but yeah, Peter Hyams directed his final movie at 70. Gene Hackman ducked out of movies after 70.
Which is also just great. Like, actors could retire, you know.
Yeah, again, going back to, I guess Michael Caine did retire recently.
Yeah, when he was like 90.
That was like, buddy, you could have thrown in that towel a long time ago. Some of the later movies where you are just sitting at a desk pretending, and it's like they hired you. That's like geezer teasers almost in a different sense. You're in this movie because they can put your name on a poster, but you can barely stand up anymore. Andrew Davis's last movie was made when he was 60.
Oh.
That's our Gene Hackman episode, I guess.
Maybe mm-hmm. just a shame that he didn't go out on an all-time high point the way Randolph Scott did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, can't claim Welcome to Mooseport as being one of the best Gene Hackman movies.
I like Runaway Jury, so maybe just one earlier and it would have been great.
Or did he watch Welcome to Mooseport and like Alexander, he wept because there was no more land to conquer.
Bit of a Sean Connery thing going on with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, that's another guy who didn't retire at top. Jesus. I guess that's it. Two really solid thrillers. Not like all-timers for me, but definitely two worthwhile action thrillers. Solid meat and potatoes stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, but how, in your opinion, how does Narrow Margin stack up to its original?
Not, I guess. Because the Richard Flesh one is just like zero fat, streamlined, 1 hour, in, out, forget about it, the end. And this one, like I said, I feel like at certain times it just slows down and doesn't know what to do. Kind of like, oh, it's Gene Hackman's being chased around the train by the killers and he's got to hide. And then it's like, okay, what's going to happen now? Oh, fade to black. And he's just talking to Ann Archer about her son.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait, what happened to, you don't know how to go into an action scene here? What's happening?
Fair enough.
So that felt a bit weird for me. And it's just like a Narrow Margin. It's just like breakneck pace, like those early, not early, like with Richard Fleischer, you have sort of have like first of a bulk of sort of so-so stuff, and then he makes a run of like great stuff like Narrow Margin and Armored Car Robbery, which are just noirs that are barely 70 minutes long and just like so good. All right. So, yeah, find yourself an hour-long Richard Fleischer noir. Not that that's got anything to do with what this episode was about.
What kind of does?
And then later he would go on to make stuff like Dr. Doolittle, some of the most bloated garbage you could ever imagine. That's it, I guess, yeah. For the fourth time. yeah, I mean, check these out and check out some other Gene Hackman movies. Because he was a great actor. He's got a lot of, maybe not straight action, as many straight action movies out there. Except maybe like Behind Enemy Lines, which is one of his last movies. That's straight up action. He plays a small supporting part. But he's got a lot of good action thrillers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta leave the action to Owen Wilson in that one.
They should have swapped roles. That would have been fun to see.
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff where he plays like the bad guy too, like early stuff, like Prime Cut. Lee Marvin has all the action. French Connection 1 and 2. Night Moves. It's a great one. You know, Crimson Tide, Enemy of the State. Stuff like that. Check it out.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stuff. Great actor. Skip Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, though.
But it's not as bad as people say. All not right. A recommendation, though.
Not a recommendation. More of a just a note. All right, well, you can find us on the webpage, allautofbubblegum.com, where you'll find links to our Discord, where you can come and chat, tell us what to cover, or tell us what you hate about the podcast or what you know about the podcast. You can also find links there to stuff like the Patreon, where we try to release some episodes, but gotta be honest with you, we're batting like one Patreon episode a year. So we're trying to get that up. We'll see you next time when we're gonna cover something different.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye for now.
See ya.
Bye bye.
Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Major. You did.
I lied.
I'm the guy with the plan, because I'm smarter than you. I'm smarter than you.